Guys, welcome back. And in this module, what I want to talk about is direct mail marketing campaigns. Specifically, then I'm going to go and show you guys exactly how I do my direct mail marketing campaigns to achieve maximum results with minimum expense and minimum work, for that matter. Now, there's lots of different ways to do this, okay? But really, what it comes down to is two approaches, the shotgun approach and the sniper approach. With the shotgun approach, we're simply mailing letters to a targeted neighborhood or maybe a targeted audience. Using some sort of mailing list, we send out a bunch of letters, the phone rings, and we make some deals, okay? The sniper approach, well, first it requires us to compile a list of prospects that are going to be quite a bit warmer. You know, now we're still going to use a targeted audience, but the audience itself is going to be much more inclined to speak with us. And this is going to be an ongoing process, not a one-time hit, okay? That means, in other words, we won't just send out a letter one time. As a successful marketer, guys, you're going to do both, and I'm going to teach you how to do both, okay? You know, and here's the thing, y'all. Many times, I guess you guys have already heard me say this a bunch. This business is simple, but it's not easy, okay? Let me tell you this. It's not just as easy as, like, you send out a couple of letters, you make a couple of million bucks. Life just does not work that way, okay? Direct mail is a nice, politically correct term for junk mail. And y'all know what we do with junk mail, right? That's right. It gets tossed in the trash. National average is 0.25% to a 1% response rate. That means, in general, 995 letters out of 1,000 are getting thrown in the trash and not even getting a response, okay? Then again, guys, that means 5 do get a response. And really, that's all we need, particularly if you're working with the right list and you've got the right letter. Now, that said, I've got a letter that I personally use, which I'll share with you guys. And in this market, it gets me a pretty generally gets me a 6% response. We'll get that towards the end of this module, okay? And I guess what I'm saying here is you can't even mail out 1,000 letters and expect to make a deal. If you've mailed 10,000, you still haven't got a deal, then we need to talk. You may have a poor list. You may not be doing the letters correctly. You may not be negotiating correctly when folks do call, but there's definitely a breakdown there if you've got that kind of numbers out and you still haven't made a deal. You know, that's here again, just a plug for the mastermind. That's why we've got the mastermind, is to work those sort of problems out. I've just been in this long enough to know that that's true, guys. Don't get your feelings hurt, because it is a numbers game. And I guess I'm saying that to say that no quality mailing campaign is ever going to be perfect on the first shot. It takes some testing. It takes some persistence. To be honest, it takes some tracking, a little bit of data collection. I've done a lot of that myself. Okay. Now, in my letter, I did data collection, which I got to tell you guys, it was off the charts, the sort of data collection I did. But then again, you know, my background was in engineering, so of course I'm into that sort of thing. I want to give you guys two examples that are real life examples, one from my own company and then one from a guy who's kind of, I'd say he's my competitor, but really he's kind of not. I say that because while he might be my competitor on the buy and holds and the flips, he also happens to buy probably half, real close to half, maybe a third of the houses that I wholesale out. He and I have become good friends over the years, and it's probably because, you know, we've made each other quite a bit of money, both of us. Anyway, his organization sends out between 15,000 and 25,000 postcards every month. I mean, really. Serious mailings, okay? He's got a guy on his staff that does nothing but field calls just on those postcards, one dude. And this guy, he buys a lot of houses. Last June, he bought out another investor here in town who was retiring and picked up something like 183 doors. Like in one check. Isn't that crazy? Okay. On average, he does about 250 to 300 homes a year. A large piece of that is, like I said, generated off these postcards that he sends out. Second largest piece, by the way, is me providing him a bunch of wholesale deals. Okay. My organization, now when we're in full wholesale mode, which is not the whole year, okay? When we are in full-blown wholesale mode, we're sending out 2,500 letters a week, and we do not do postcards. It's something I and many people in this business call a yellow letter. Although my yellow letter is substantially different than a lot of other people's yellow letter that you're going to run into. There's a lot of people doing something they call a yellow letter. In the best county within Arkansas that we work in, that letter generates, like I said, a 6% response rate consistently. It's every year. I've done this over and over, okay? So 2,500 letters is going to get about 200 phone calls, which gets us 1 to 3 deals, depending on the time of year and the quality of the list. And like I said, the county that we're working in. Now, the reason I mentioned before Ryan's approach is because even though he's my competitor, is because he uses a shotgun approach. I use more of a rifle approach for certain types of lists and leads, and then I use, frankly, it's kind of semi between rifle and shotgun approach together for a set of leads. And I'll get into all this as we go along, but I wanted to go over the shotgun approach first and show you how to use it. First of all, the shotgun approach is best with postcards, mostly because they're really, really inexpensive, okay? Now, you can get a targeted list for all kinds of different, and you can get them from different mailing list companies all over the United States. There's nobody in particular that I recommend there. Frankly, where that's concerned, what I've learned is that companies are great at providing a list that I may need, which might be like this type of list, like maybe an absentee owner list, for example, but might not be very good at a different kind of list, like maybe pre-foreclosure leads or free and clear house leads. Do you guys see what I mean? I mean, each company seems to have their little niche of how they do things. I guess to put it more simply, you're going to need more than one mailing list company, and that's just something you're going to have to find out that's going to work well for your area, because literally there's hundreds and hundreds of choices out there. And of course, as I've mentioned before, each market's going to be slightly different. For sake of this discussion, let me just say that we're going to use a shotgun approach and simply use an absentee owner list. You guys know what an absentee owner is, right? Absentee owner is somebody who owns a house at address A but receives their mail at address B. Most often, that means they're a landlord. Sometimes it's somebody who inherited the property or some other scenario. But the great thing about landlords is that landlords have a habit of becoming burned out just with the act of landlording. You know, I mean, you change out a few toilets at 10 o'clock at night because the tenant doesn't know how to use a plunger, and you tell me if you don't get burned out pretty quick, right? Last year, our absentee owner list was hot. I mean, really, really hot. Why? I think it's because the landlords could not evict due to COVID. In our state, the only way to get a deadbeat tenant out of the property was if a new owner took over the property, because in Arkansas, a new owner does not necessarily have to honor the lease, provided there's been a 30-day notice that the property has changed hands. Landlords weren't collecting their rent, and they were more than happy to get rid of their houses. A whole bunch of rental property changed hands last year in central Arkansas. Anyway, let's say that we want to do a shotgun approach direct mail campaign for absentee owners in a particular zip code. First, we go buy the list or rent the list from some mailing list broker. This assumes, of course, that we already have our answering services and our scripts all set up like we discussed in the last module. By the way, just want to mention, if you'll go to your resources section, I think it's in other resources, I've got a list of, there's 50 or 100 names on there with websites of mailing list brokers, some rent, some sell, whatever. I'll let you guys go check that out. But there is something in your resources packet there. Let me walk you guys through the process of doing postcards. It's not hard. However, if you miss a step, you're pretty much going to get a zero response rate. How do you think I know that? You're going to need to do multiple cards in multiple colors. In general, brighter is better. As we've said before, you don't need your professional photo. Although this is a place where you might be able to use a logo and have it work for you. Remember that the information that solves their problem is far more important than anything that tweaks your ego. You're there to help them, not the other way around, right? Anyway, you can print at least three different postcards in three different colors, and it's done for several reasons. First of all, you're going to have to mail at least two or three postcards to get responses. I mean, let me say that a different way. You're going to have to mail anywhere from 1 to 5 postcards to each person in order to get a response. Most of the time with postcards, if you're going to get a response, it comes after the second or third mailing, not the first. I know an online marketer that teaches you need to get 16 no's to get a yes if you're doing online stuff or shotgun approach direct mails. And that's literally 16 no's from the same client. So I'm saying all that to say this. If you're not prepared to mail several cards out over several weeks, then don't do the mail at all. Literally, you're just wasting your money, guys, okay? Get prepared to do this before you pull the trigger on this one. For that matter, don't assume just because you mailed it that they even got it, saw it, paid attention to it, nothing, okay? Think about what you guys do. Most people throw it out. They never even look at it. Junk mail goes in the garbage can, where they call it file 13. Junk mail goes into file 13 just when you pick it up from the mailbox, right? The other reason I want you to have more than one card and more than one color is because you're going to do some testing. When people call you, ask about the card they got. Keep score of which cards and which colors and which headlines, you know, which layouts, what did the best, the ones that get the least calls. You know, you'll filter those out for your neighborhood or for your state or wherever, you know, however you're working. You'll filter those out. The ones that are getting the better response, you'll use more and more of that. Do you guys see what I mean? So once you have all this, go ahead and mail your first batch of postcards. A good test is usually about 1,000 postcards. Generally, I use bulk mail, but you can also use first class on postcards. It doesn't seem to matter if you use a live stamp or a meter on postcards. In our example, you know, you've got three colors. So mail out your first three cards, three colors. Mail out, say, 350 cards in each color. If you're going to get calls off the first cards, they'll usually come within 3 or 4 days after you mail, and expect something like 1%, which means out of 1,000 cards, you might get 10 calls. 15 to 20 days later, mail out another 1,000 on the second card, again in three colors. If you get no response by the second mailing, you may have a lousy list, you know, for what you've tried to do. It doesn't mean it's totally a lousy list. It may work for other things, but you have it's not a good list for postcards. The chances are not the card if you closely copy some of the examples that I'm going to give you in the resources section, okay? Now, if you get a response that's more than 1%, go ahead and send the third round, again, after about 15 to 20 days. This could actually be repeated 2 more times. Like I said, as far as I'm concerned, you could do it 5 times, but only if you're getting the response rate you need. When the response rate starts to drop off, that's when it's time to stop. Postcards take time, and shotgun approaches take time. And as I said, it's a numbers game. And since we talked about mailing lists just briefly, then perhaps we should get more into the specifics of that and what you can do when you purchase or rent a mailing list. Here's some requirements for the list. First and foremost, you got to be dealing with homeowners. Obviously, sending a card to a renter is, for obvious reasons, is useless, right? Now, it'd be great to have a list with a phone number when it's available. But remember, you're going to be having them call you, so that's not necessarily something you absolutely have got to have. The other thing you need to be cognizant of with a phone number is that some people are on the do not call list, and some people got an attitude about being on the do not call list, and might even turn you in for bothering them. You don't want to get a reputation as somebody who does that, okay, if you could possibly avoid it. None of us likes robocalls. None of us likes spam calls. I mean, like I said, remember how you would like to be treated if you were on the other side of it, right? Now, the list should have been what's called clean within the last 3 months. That means they checked the list to make sure everything's good in, okay? Where that's concerned, you should also never get a list that's more than about 6 months old. And the reason is property changes hands all the time. A list that's more than 6 months old is just not going to be that useful to y'all. You know where that's concerned? You need to spend whatever time is necessary to make sure that you absolutely have the best list possible for that particular campaign. You know, postage is not cheap these days, although compared to making a deal, it's totally cheap, right? 55 cents. The thing is, a good list is going to be the difference between success and failure. Sure, you got to get good at negotiation. You got to get good at dealing with the phone calls, all that. But the list is paramount. As you talk with the list brokers that you're going to be dealing with, you're just going to have to get a feel for who's able to provide you with what you need versus who's just trying to sell you some old information. And a lot of times, that's exactly what's happening. Now, it's totally cool to use more than one list, but I do not mail more than 1,000 pieces to any list until I'm seeing some results. In other words, 1,000 is always my test criteria. Where that's concerned, know that you're probably going to have to buy some minimums, okay? Typically, you're going to have to buy about 5,000 names minimum. Not always true, but you don't have to mail all of them, and you shouldn't. The best thing to do here is tell the list broker that you don't want to commit to using the list or buying a bigger list or renting a bigger list until you've been able to test their list to make sure that it works for your purposes and that they're delivering exactly the quality that they say they are. Now, most brokers, of course, are going to want your repeat business, so they're going to do the best they can for you. I've kind of painted a bad picture of list brokers, and it's really not true. Most list brokers are great, but like I said, they tend to get into their niche, okay? So, you know, you got to make sure that you're matched up both in your market and in what you're wanting to accomplish with that particular broker. So let's talk about labels, okay? Labels are okay on a postcard, but only a postcard. Let me be real clear here. Never put mailing list labels on an envelope unless you simply could care less about, you know, making any money and getting it open, right? Now, that said, let me rephrase that. You could put return address labels on an envelope, and I'll talk about that when we get to the yellow letter, but never, never use a mailing list label for homeowners' addresses on the letter, especially on a letter. Under any circumstances, it will not get opened. We've done the data. We know it to be true. Hopefully, I just made that clear, right? Here's something you can do. If you have a list that has phone numbers attached to it, you know, and you want to see if the demographics match up and if the list broker has done his job, you or your service call maybe 20 of the names just to see if the demographics on the list are close to what the list broker represented for you. If not, I mean, just cold call them, okay? If not, you probably have a questionable list and you go back to that broker and see about, you know, what's going on here, okay? Either get your money back or do a different list because obviously it's not going to work. You guys see what I mean? Okay, I've already mentioned how absentee owners is one type of homeowner that you can use for a shotgun approach. Let's talk about a few others. You know what? In fact, let's talk about some that are okay to use as a shotgun approach and some that you probably shouldn't use as a shotgun approach. How's that sound? Now, a list of free and clear homeowners, that's a good list for a shotgun approach. If you can get a list of free and clear absentee owners, boy, that's a fantastic list. Think about it. Now you've got a landlord who's potentially burned out but doesn't owe anything on the property, which means he can sell it on all kinds of different terms that might work for you and him. He's not necessarily stuck doing cash because he doesn't have to pay off a mortgage. Do you see where that's probably powerful? Now, granted, he may not also have as much incentive because if he doesn't owe mortgage on it, it doesn't matter if it sits vacant. But so it works both ways. However, anytime you can get into a deal for more than just a cash deal, like I said, other terms, boy, that's powerful. If a person's in foreclosure or bankruptcy, then a shotgun approach is not a very good way to get their attention. Besides that, they've got some serious time constraints, especially on foreclosure. So for that, we're going to definitely use a sniper approach. Do you see why? You know, let me say another word about bankruptcy and foreclosure especially. Guys, with foreclosure, they're already getting letters every day from bill collectors. They're already getting letters every day from people offering to fix their credit so that they can pay their bills. And they're already getting letters every day from every other investor in town trying to get them to come to the table for a foreclosure deal. You've got to use a sniper approach on that one simply because those folks are tired. They're getting hassled. They're getting inundated. They're tired, okay? That one's going to be one for a sniper approach. But see, the same thing goes for things like probate. Now, probate's a tricky one because you're going to be dealing with people's feelings. It takes a different kind of letter, and you don't want to do a postcard because it's just not personal enough. It doesn't work. And when we get to it, I'll show you some tricks and tips on that as well. Expired listings, great for postcards. It also works well with letters, so you could do either way on that. Tax defaulted properties, great for postcards. Out-of-state landlords, great for postcards, and, you know, also letters. Both work on that. Red tag, code violations, things like that, condemned houses, awesome for postcards. Now, when couples divorce, they often, almost always, are required to divide up the assets to get the house sold. Not they only sell the house, but oftentimes that happens. I've personally found that a letter works better for this. However, we know that postcards work too, so give it a try with a postcard. Now, there's some other lists out there, but I'm not sure that it's going to serve you guys as new people in this business. I'm thinking if you're doing wholesale retail, you're probably new in this business. And I'm not sure these are the best lists for you guys to use right now. You can get lists of financially unstable homeowners. These are people who are not in bankruptcy or foreclosure yet, but they might be headed that way, okay? Depending on the state you're in, there may be some language that you're required to use to, when you approach that client. And that can be sticky and tricky and... And like I said, I don't feel like that's something to teach you guys for while you're newbies. Maybe when we get to subject two in the pretty house business, I'll teach you guys that. The others are a list of seniors who've had their homes more than 20 years. It means there's a strong possibility the home's paid off and again, that you can get terms. There's also a possibility that their health is failing or that they need to downsize. There's a number of things when people are seniors. The problem is, guys, if you end up with a senior who's got Alzheimer's or dementia, you can open up a huge can of worms legally with that senior's family and with local law enforcement who might feel like you're taking advantage of them. Again, check the laws in your state, because I know several states, California's one, I know for sure, have enacted statutes specifically to protect seniors from getting scammed by unscrupulous shysters, and you certainly don't want to use the wrong verbiage and end up in that group. You guys see what I mean? I've been asked a bunch of times about flyers, and so I think as long as we're doing mailing type stuff, this would be a good place to address this. First, let me just say I've tried it. It didn't work for me. I don't use flyers, okay? I have tried it. I just didn't get very good results. And again, like I've told you guys before, that could be market specific. I know people who've tried it and gotten some decent results. So first of all, the question is going to be, what sort of flyers do you even mean when you say flyers? Because here's the thing. Flyers could be inserts like in your weekly junk mail. Flyers could be in the newspaper or in things like that, or flyers could be like door hangers that people are manually putting up. There's lots and lots and lots of different kinds of flyers. So we need to be clear about what we're talking about. For purpose of this, let's just go with a simple, 8.5 by 11 insert that goes in a newspaper or junk mailers or whatever, that sort of thing. Now, let me say before I go any farther, this is by far the cheapest way to go, and certainly the most hands-off. If that means you're putting them in either junk mail that comes once a week in the newspaper, or you're doing something like that. If you're putting door hangers on, that's obviously not hands-off. But here's the thing, guys. This is the lowest of the low on junk mail, okay? If you get a quarter to a half a percent with these flyers, then you've done pretty well. But then again, they're really, really cheap. So like I said, and if you do it right, it's hands-off, unless you're putting door hangers out. So I've tried a few different colors when I did it. Truth is, I didn't notice any measurable difference with the color of the paper or full color ads versus black and white, that sort of thing. As far as what to put on the flyers, it's going to be the same as everything else you do. Bottom line, anytime you want somebody to pick up the phone because of something you wrote down on a piece of paper, you better make it real clear what you're going to do for them, how you're going to solve their problems, and how they are the hero of their own story. In other words, as soon as you tell them how great you are, they're going to throw it in the garbage can because they could care less. A few things that I do know work, like I said, are the same things we work as Snipe signs, other forms of advertising. I buy houses in big, bold letters. That works. The word cash or all cash offer works. Any price, any condition, any area. You guys have seen these before. Something you do have room for in a flyer that you can't necessarily put on a Snipe sign or other forms of advertising because of how long people are going to be looking at it is a testimonial or two. Testimonials are powerful. They're always powerful. That's why so many people use them on websites. I mean, they work. Now, word on testimonials. In the world of social media, your testimonials are going to get looked up. Make sure they're real people and real testimonies. Don't lie. Don't lie, guys. There's no reason for it. Now, if they're not real, you're probably going to live to regret it, especially if you're not in a huge town. Reputation's everything. I live in a relatively small town. How do you think I know that? Oh, by the way, on testimonials, there is a great place to use a picture, but it's obviously it's not your ugly mug. It's somebody else's ugly mug, right? Okay, so there's three ways to do this. They all work about the same. Everything's got its good and bad points. If you actually put flyers on doors or you get door hangers, you'll definitely get more calls back. However, putting flyers on doors is super duper time consuming. I think the reason it works is because, people have to actually physically touch the flyer when they open their door. I mean, they got to grab it as they come through the door, right? That said, and I don't know that, that's just I'm guessing here. That said, it is very time consuming for you. I'd rather see you guys doing deal. And this is not going to be cheap to hire a teenager. Even if it's a teenager walking door to door to do this, it's just not going to be that cheap to do. The other methods, like I said, decent results in other markets with putting it in the Sunday paper with the rest of the coupons or in the weekly paper, those weekly papers like Thrifty Nifkel or Penny Saver, things like that. Every town's got some sort of paper like that. The cool thing there is it is relatively targeted. You can get it put out to a particular zip code or whatever. But like so many of those things, like I said, a lot of times it ends up not getting read. And guys, this is the method I've seen that most people use when they do flyers. The reason is because it's simple. It's easy. It's relatively inexpensive. The cost, you just get the printing done and you hand it off to the people who stick it in there. It's next to nothing compared to direct mail of course, the downside is, like I said, the stuff many times doesn't even get read. Now, this last method, in my opinion, doesn't work very well. But again, like I said, I'm even mentioning flyers because I know they do work in some markets, okay? And, you know, for a couple of thousand flyers, it might be worth a shot in your market to see. You might find a gold mine in there for your market. The third method is where the flyers are inserted into those, you know, those, whatever they're called, value packs or whatever, that you get in your mailbox once a week. You know what I'm talking about, the once a week where you get all the coupons in your mail for Kroger or Albertsons or Fry's, whatever you've got in your neighborhood. The thing is, again, most people just throw that out without even looking at it. But then again, as we've said before, man, it only takes one. So those are so cheap, it might be worth playing with in your market and giving it a whirl. And like I said, that's true of all the marketing that we've mentioned. It's all kind of trial and error. It all works, but it's how it works and how you got to tweak it for your particular area. Something else I should mention here while we're at it is that if you're going to try this, you don't want to even do it. Think about doing it, really. In the median neighborhoods, you certainly don't want to do it in the above median neighborhoods. Flyers go in your lowest price neighborhoods where you're willing to buy houses, okay? Whether this is a blue-collar neighborhood or even for those of you who are qualified to work in the war zones, these are areas we're going to get the most response because those are the areas where people are the most dirt poor and looking for fast cash and some sort of a deal, especially thrifty nickel. I mean, that's what a thrifty nickel is all about, is saving money. Okay, now that we've gone through all that and you guys are highly educated marketing geniuses, let me tell you my personal secret to success. I'd love to tell you I thought this up. Boy, I wish I thought this up. And to be honest, there's a legend about how it got thought up, but I don't even know if the legend's true. According to the legend, the secretary of one of my personal teachers, actually, and her husband were trying to flip some houses. Of course they were. You know, she worked for one of the biggest mentors and investors in Florida at the time. Thing is, there was this one house in a particular area that they really wanted, and they tried repeatedly to contact the owner with like zero response. But John wanted this house. The guy's name was John. He wanted this house, boy. At the time, the type of sales letter most people were using was called a long-form letter. And that was popular back then. Literally, it was like a 3 to 4 page letter detailing everything that you as the investor could do for the client. Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, those do not work anymore. There's some evidence to show that they work on a web page, but that's an absolutely different animal from a mailer, okay? They absolutely do not work on a mailer simply because people don't have the time and don't want to waste time reading that much. They want their problems solved now. You know, today, with the press of a button, with their cell phone, just bang, and it's done. Instant gratification. Now, as long as we're here, actually, the only reason that work on a web page is because of other attributes on that page that keeps people engaged. Now, I'm not going to talk much about web pages in this course. This course is more about getting you guys up and running, making your first few deals, getting out of the rat race, getting rocking and rolling, okay? That is certainly more advanced stuff to be set up with when you're really building a huge machine, a huge career out of this. But let me go ahead and throw a few things out there right now since we're kind of in the area on it. The reason a long form letter tends to work on web pages is because that web page has already some super compelling language in what's called the first fold. Now the first fold, and that comes from long form letters actually, the first fold is the first part of the page that anybody, whether they're on their cell phone, if they're on a tablet, or if they're looking at a computer, that's the first part of what they see, okay? It's before they have to scroll anyway. The first fold has to have critical information that solves the problem of the potential buyer immediately. That's that 3-second rule. And it doesn't matter what the product is. It does not have to be real estate. It's for anything you are trying to do online. Remember that, like I said, we got 3 seconds to impress, okay? The first fold is to impress. Everything after that in the long form letter is all about that building trust that we talked about before. Anyway, back to the story. John and his wife are trying to find this house, right? They're repeatedly trying to contact this owner, and John's getting frustrated. Now, he and his wife happen to be out driving that same neighborhood looking for vacant houses one day. They passed a particular house, and again, John stopped the car, and you know what? Out of his frustration, he takes out the yellow pad that they'd been you know, writing down the addresses of vacant houses on and just scratched out in his own handwriting just a simple message. The message read, "Hi, my name is John. I'd like to buy your house," at whatever address it was, right? "Please call me at such and such a number, okay, thanks. And then he put it on their door like a flyer, okay, posted it on the door, since nothing else had helped him find these folks. Literally 2 days later, he got a call and was able to make a deal and get a contract on the house, okay? And from there, guys, the yellow letter was supposedly born. Now, I don't know if that's a true story or not. That's just the story I was told. But I'm here to tell you right now, the yellow letter is by far the best way I know of to pick up your lower end, your median and below properties anywhere in the United States. And when I say lower, I'm not talking about the war zones. I'm just talking about, you know, your normal blue collar areas. We went over that in one of the other modules. I want you guys targeting those areas first so you get some experience for a lot of reasons. First of all, the houses are cheap, okay? Secondly, it's all about exit strategies. And we're gonna talk about exit strategies later, but blue collar neighborhoods have by far the most exit strategies. Because of the nature of those type of neighborhoods, literally, you guys almost always have three exit strategies. The minimum, you can either wholesale it to another investor, you can retail, flip it, you can rehab it and do it yourself, or you can buy it and hold it as a rental to build your portfolio. And you know, you guys, by this time, you guys know, that's the backbone of making money in this business anyway. There's other deals out there. There's some huge deals out there in paper and subject to in the pretty house business. However, if you don't know how to successfully exit a property with those three exit strategies and work in these neighborhoods, you're not going to survive in this business. So let me teach you guys exactly how to do this letter so we can get you guys making some money. Now, as I start to explain this, I know where a bunch of you guys are going. I know it because I went there myself. You're thinking to yourself, God, this is stupid, man. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. There is no way it's going to work. I'm not going to do what he says. We're going to put more information on the letter. Here's the warning. If you do not believe it, if you do not do it exactly the way I say it, if you do not do it exactly the way I did it, that I, you know, say to do it, you are not going to get the same results that I get, guys. I'm telling y'all, I don't know why this works. I'm sure there's some psychology to it, but y'all, I have taken tremendous, tremendous amounts of data on this. I know exactly how to make it work. Now, I've been flipping houses here and there for extra money. Yeah, I've been doing this for a very long time. I started construction when I was 17. Literally, I moved out of my parents' house when I was 17 years old. I thought I knew everything like a lot of 17-year-olds. I thought my parents were idiots. And first big lesson there, I realized they weren't the idiot. The idiot was running around my back pocket, but that's a whole different story. Anyway, I figured out pretty quick I was going to need a job, and I just kind of fell into construction because, you know, it paid well. And frankly, there was somebody willing to hire me. Anyway, by the time I'm in my early 20s, I'm listed by Union Standards in California as a journeyman carpenter, as well as a journeyman painter. I make the move to Arkansas. I find out there's no union, which means the wage was about one third of what I was used to. And then I found out it's what's called a, quote, right to work state, whatever that means, which it basically means this. It means a boss can fire you for absolutely no reason. The boss can fire you because you came in without a smile on your face and there's nothing you can do about it. You may not even be able to qualify for unemployment if you get fired under circumstances like that. Huge difference from California, huge eye openers. So I started my own construction company, and it wasn't long before I flipped my first house. And then I continued to flip houses. Fast forward to the year 2000, I'm graduating from University of Arkansas with a degree in engineering. I find out once again, I'm not going to make the money that I thought I was going to make. Entry-level engineers in Arkansas at that time started at about $34,000. Well, civil engineers. Civil engineers are not the highest paid. Civil engineers in Arkansas started at $34,500 a year. I made more than double that building houses in a crappy year. And when I built on spec, or I bought an old junker and remodeled it. Now, it might take me 6 months to do the job because, of course, I had everything else going. So that was something, you know, I had my crews do when we had nothing else to do, right? But still, I make $20,000 or $30,000 extra just for doing that. Needless to say, you know, I didn't get very impressed very quickly with engineering. Now, I'd heard about this particular real estate teacher and decided to go check out his courses. It was a free weekend course that cost me $97. I'm not even going to get into the free translated to $97, but that's beside the point. Anyway, the upsell, because there's always an upsell, the upsell of that weekend was his $5,000 ugly house boot camp, okay? Which was about to happen maybe 2 months later. I think it's 2 months, 6 weeks, something like that. It's a 5-day seminar. Like a lot of teachers, he also built value by saying, you know, he'd give us all the binders for the course today if we put our money down today. He said that he'd we could spend 30 days going through the binders, make, you know, and he guaranteed it for 30 days. In fact, he said if we thought it was bunk, he'd give us our $5,000 back. Sounded to me like I didn't have anything to lose, so I gave it a shot. I get home with these binders, and boy, I digested the information. Remember, I'm used to studying. I'm an engineer, right? Repeatedly. I swear, I must have read these things 6 or 7 times. Anyway, and it's quite a bit of information. As I remember, there was at least 4 binders and a god-awful amount of CDs. I mean, there's a bunch of CDs. Anyway, I was determined to prove this guy wrong. He's kind of a jerk. I was determined to prove this guy wrong and get my $5,000 back. Well, between the binders and what I'd learned over the weekend, yeah, I did several things I'm teaching you guys right now. I spent a Saturday. I drove around in the working class section of town and copied down about 75 or 100 addresses. Maybe it was 100. Honestly, I don't remember, but it's a bunch of addresses, several pages. Now, this was back in the days before everything was online like it is now. I called in sick on Monday. I went down to the county assessor's office where I introduced myself to the ladies down there. You know, I told them I needed to find the owners of these properties. They smiled and it's like they knew what was going on. They directed me to this little room where I could go through the information, which was literally, I'm not kidding you guys, literally on paper. Okay. Incidentally, this is the same room where I met all the title company folks and other folks and realtors that were doing title searches. I made some really cool connections back in those days. Some of these friendships and some of these business relationships, I still have to this day. But that's, again, a whole different story. Of the names on my list, I was able to get addresses on most of them, and the bigger part of them, believe it or not, were absentee owners. I was pretty impressed. Turns out the blue-collar neighborhood was largely a rental neighborhood. It's exactly what Ron had said. Anyway, I went home. I sat down with a yellow legal pad, okay, and I wrote out like 50 or 60 letters by hand. It might have been a little more than that. Anyway, I addressed the letters by hand. I mailed the letters. My wife at the time, she's not my ex-wife, but my wife at the time was a stay-at-home mom, so I put our landline phone number, you know, that was because she was home during the day. So I put our home phone, back when we all had landlines, I put that on the letter. A couple of days later, I get a call. I'm at work, I get a call from her. She wants to know what the hell I did because the phone's ringing off the hook. I didn't know what to think. I just told her to take their names and their phone numbers, and I'd call them back as soon as I got home from work. I mean, over the next week, I bet you I got 20 calls. Now, there's more to the story, but let me tell you about the 20 calls. Ultimately, they turned into deals, 2 deals, both of which made me $5,000. One of them I actually closed and had the money in my pocket before I went to Ron's seminar 2 months later. I didn't even cash the cashier's check for the wholesale flip. I brought the check with me because I wanted to show it off to Ron. Needless to say, I didn't get my money back for his course either. Now, guys, you've heard me say that the average response on direct mail is somewhere between 0.25% up to about 6%. And you also just heard me say that I sent out 60 letters and got 20 phone calls, which would be a 33% response rate. Sounds inconsistent, right? Let me explain. In 2000, this was not a well-known sales tactic, and the response rate was way higher than it is now. When I use this letter now, I consistently get between 5 and 7% response rate, depending on the neighborhood I'm working in. That said, the fact that I got a 33% response rate initially raised some eyebrows, even with Ron's group, because nobody had ever done that, okay? This came out in a conversation between Ron and I when he was grilling me about, you know, when I had that cashier's check in my hand. Apparently, I screwed up the directions, but I screwed them up exactly the right way. Now, what exactly happened, I'm not sure of. Perhaps it was the letter itself, because it's just so unprofessional looking. Perhaps it was because my hands were getting tired writing those letters, so my script had become kind of sloppy. Maybe it was because it was handwritten. But then again, other people who were doing letters were also doing them handwritten. Maybe it had something to do with the postage. All I had at the time was some cool Snoopy stamps, so that's what I used. But let me tell you what I think. We all know that the secret to direct mail marketing is to get the letter open. If you can make people curious enough to actually open the envelope, they'll read what's inside. It all goes back to that 3-second rule. Here's something I know about the yellow letter. It doesn't look like junk mail, but it also doesn't look like a bill. And it certainly doesn't look like a letter from your grandma, but the fact that everything's handwritten on the envelope makes a person curious. So being an engineer, I decided to do some research. So I collected data, and I collected a lot of data. Now, I was told to use a blue pen, but I didn't believe that one way or the other. So I tried blue pens, I tried black pens, I even tried red pens, and I tracked the data. I tried various stamps, I tried metered mail, and I tracked the data. Guys, I even changed the angle of the stamp. I put it on straight and neatly on the envelope. I cocked it a few degrees each direction. I even put the stamps, no kidding, upside down just to see if there was a difference, and I tracked the data. I tried cursive versus script. I had my 14-year-old daughter write some letters with the, you know, the swirly, kind of curly, cute lettering that 14-year-old girls have, right? And we'll get to that in a second because there's something cute that's still in my letters to this day that came out of that. I had some of the boys in my Boy Scout troop do letters for me, some of the older boys, and threw them a few bucks. And again, I tracked the results. I tried different colors other than yellow, and I tracked the results. I tried sealing the envelopes and then not sealing the envelopes, just kind of tucking them in, and I tracked the results. I even tried, guys, folding the letters different ways and tracked those results. That's what happens when your engineering brain likes to think in math. But here's the thing. By the time I was done tracking all those results, I had literally nailed down exactly, and I mean exactly, how to get max results for the minimum amount of work, and that's what I'm about to tell you next. All right, let's make you some money. Get yourself a regular white, not yellow, white pad, 8.5 by 11 pad, and write down the following, skipping a line between each line that you write. Use a blue pen like the one you see in this picture. The particular one is a Paper Mate Flair. I've also found that a Pilot Precise script works just as well. Something to remember, you're going to need to buy at least a box of these pens, and the reason will be apparent here in a minute, so bear with me. Just like this. Hi, well, you can't see the hi there. My name is Alan. I would like to buy your house at, and leave a line blank. Please call me at such and such a number. Thanks. And even the smiley face. Remember I told you my 14-year-old daughter did this? You know how 14-year-olds like put, you know, little hearts on the eyes? We tracked it. It works. Now, some real quick do's and don'ts. Do not use an 800 number or any sort of a toll-free number. Use a regular number. I've already covered this, but let me say it again. Don't use a number that just answers to an answering machine. Use a number that you know goes to a burner phone that you've already got set up with a live answering service. Do not use your cell number unless you absolutely intend to answer phone calls at all hours of the day and night. If you're working a regular 40-hour a week, that's probably not going to be a great idea. Your boss is probably not going to like you when the phone starts ringing constantly. And as I've mentioned before, I recommend those two companies. I'm not affiliate for either one of them. I like Pat Live, like Specialty Answering Service, and Specialty Answering Service happens to be the company that we're using right now, presently today. Okay, the next thing you do is take that white copy, which we're going to call your proof, and you make the boilerplate letters. Do you guys know what boilerplate means? This is I think it's mostly an engineering term, but the term boilerplate refers to something like the standardized text, copies, documents, or just some sort of method or procedure of anything. It's a way of doing things over and over again without making major changes to whatever the original is. The idea here is efficiency, okay? So you're going to make your boilerplates. You're either going to go either buy some 20-pound canary yellow bond paper and run a few reams of paper through your own laser printer, or if you don't have a laser printer, then you'll need to run to Staples or Office Depot, whatever's out there in your town, and get 1,000 or so copies of this letter made on yellow paper. Now, the picture on the slide you'll notice is that the address is not written in. That's what makes this the boilerplate. That's the part you're going to fill in. Do you see where I'm going with this, guys? This means that once you've created your proof and have your 1,000 copies made or whatever, all you have to do is put the address in and then put, of course, the owner's address on the envelope, and man, you're done. It's that quick. But you have to use a laser printer to have it look right. And you have to use the same sort of pen you used for the proof. And of course, it has to be the same letter writer because the handwriting needs to match, right? So I told you guys we put out about 2,500 letters a week. I don't write any of those letters. I have a bunch of ladies who come in and write letters for me, and I pay them for every 100 that they write. They come in, they do their proofs, and then they go copy off however many, you know, boilerplates they're going to be able to do that day. They work off a list, and they produce the letter. And of course, they keep a record of it. At the end of the week, I pay them for how many letters they wrote that week. And by the way, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, but we can do that for you guys too. We do that for a lot of investors. Nationwide, we do this, okay? We have a subsidiary company called justyellowletters.com where we do nothing but produce yellow letters for other investors. As my students, you guys are entitled to a discount on having those folks do it for you. Now, in terms of the envelope, I used to teach that the return address itself should also be handwritten and should simply be your home address, your city, state, zip, all that written out, okay? Over the years, the market's shifted and changed a bit, and lots of people using this form of my letter have found, and we've found too from data, that a label works just as well. However, I make the label kind of cute. I don't know if you can see it here, but see this little smiley face on the label? We do use return address labels. They're faster. We use the same information I described. You don't have to put your name. You just put your home address, a street address, not a P.O. box. Your home address or some street address and the state, city, the city, state, and zip. But like I said, we put a little cute on there, and you can go ahead and do that. If you want to write it out, that's fine too, but labels will be a little quicker for you. The other thing we do, guys, is we get what I call cute stamps, okay? Don't use the regular first class stamp or forever stamp. They don't work as well. Remember, I took data. I know this to be a fact. And if you meter the mail, your results will drop to nearly zero again, because like I said, we tried this, okay? Do not use metered mail for this mail. Don't try to send it bulk. It's got to have the personal touch. That's probably just it. The address needs to be done, by the way, in the same blue pen as the person who wrote the letter. I guess I didn't say that kind of backwards, didn't I? Whoever writes the letter, whoever's using the proof, it's their proof, their letter, they also have to address the envelope. We tried doing this assembly line style, and several things happened. First of all, the ladies got out of sync and the mailings got messed up. We had a slew of phone calls from people who said, I don't own a house at such and such an address. The second thing is, frankly, it made it hard to figure out who produced what in terms of the letters so I could pay them. Okay, everybody got irritated. Third thing, of course, the results, like I said, they just simply dropped. It's got to look like the same person did all of it. And in terms of that, let me do this. There we go. In terms of the stamp, let me also say this. Again, this was a dated thing. Cock the stamp about 10 to 15 degrees. You see how the stamp's not exactly perfect? It's got to look just a little bit sloppy. And once again, use what I call a fun stamp, a cute stamp. Incidentally, can you tell this particular picture's old? Yeah, look at that. 44 cents, not 55. That's an older picture we took of some yellow letters years ago. Now, folks, as the investor, I want you to send out the first 100 to 500 letters yourself. Follow all the steps I just showed you. Create your own little mini machine, your own proof and boilerplate, like I said. And here's why. And I want you to learn this. It's tedious. It sucks. It causes writer's cramp, and I swear you'll never want to do it again. And you will find out very quickly that you know better than to get your wife or your husband or your kids or any of your friends to do this for you. How do you think I know this? My daughter used to think this was punishment for me to have her write yellow letters. I swear, she thought it was punishment. Anyway, and then you're going to come to me, and I'm going to give you a discount, and I'm going to have my ladies who know what the heck they're doing, because they do it every day, punch out as many letters as you want per week, and that's at justyellowletters.com. In fact, let me show you a little video. The next slide, I'll show you a little video. This is actually the explainer video that's on the website at justyellowletters.com. And I'll kind of just show you how we do it. And yes, it's a plug for that part of my business, but it's also going to show you exactly how this letter writing works. Okay, guys, stay tuned for that. That'll be next slide. Hey folks, Alan Sosoyev here with JustYellowLetters.com. I'm the creator of Shoestring Real Estate, the ultimate tax sales course, and other courses in real estate investor training that you can find on AskAlHow.com. Just Yellow Letters was born out of a service that I began providing for my own students. It's one thing to tell somebody how to do something. It's quite another to take it by the hand and show them exactly how it gets done. And that's what this video is going to be about today, and that's what I did with my students. I want to show you guys exactly what we do at JustYellowLetters.com. See, the thing is, I've been using yellow letters for years, and if you've been in the real estate investing business for any length of time whatsoever, you guys understand that yellow letters are the premier direct mailing campaign tactic out there. If you want to do deals, as far as I'm concerned, it's the premier form of marketing, period. Nothing even comes close to the results I can get when I use yellow letters. Within my own real estate investing business, we send out an average of 2,500 letters per week. That generates, on average, about 1 to 2 sales a week. Yeah, you heard me right. I'm doing 50 to 75 sales per year using yellow letters, and that's just the wholesaling portion of the business. I also do plenty of rehabs. I take a lot of houses on subject to and stop people's foreclosures. I even occasionally buy paper and work with options and things like that. But let's get back to yellow letters. Before Just Yellow Letters existed, I was looking for a way to kind of be Jerry Maguire for my students and show them the money, okay? So I got an idea. I figured out exactly what we were spending for the yellow letter campaigns, and then I offered it to my students with a caveat. I said, guys, you guys pay for the letters, I'll negotiate the deal, you guys are gonna help me and watch me negotiate the deal, and then we'll split the money 50-50, is fair enough? Well, from there, the writing was on the wall and Just Yellow Letters was born. So if you get online and you do a Google search or Bing or whatever you use, you know, you're gonna find a lot of companies that offer yellow letters. There's a lot of them out there. They all tell you what they do. Again, I'm going to show you what we do. Now, maybe I'm giving away some trade secrets or two here, but you know what? If I can make you guys more successful in the long run, whether you're doing business with me or somebody else, I'll feel like it was time well spent. There's enough housing and enough money out there that all of us can be millionaires 100 times over. Easy. That's the kind of world of abundance I live in, and hopefully it's the kind you live in as well. So here's how we do it. And by the way, guys, like I said, I've been doing this for years and years. I started out as an engineer, and so I like data, and I've taken exhaustive data on everything. I've done this for many years. I know exactly the best way to do this, and I'm about to share it with you guys. First things first, one of my letter writers writes out the yellow letter by hand on a piece of white paper. Notice that they leave a place where the address would go. There's a reason for that, and I'm going to cover it here in a minute. We then take that piece of white paper, we run it on the laser printer with yellow paper for, you know, however many letters that the particular writer is going to run that day. Then they get to work on the letters working from the list provided. In this case, it's an absentee owner list. The writers fold the letter in a very specific way and they place it in the envelope such that the writing shows as soon as the person grabs the envelope. Now, we don't even seal the envelope. There's a reason for that too. Guys, I took data. For some reason, envelopes that are left unsealed get responded to more often. I don't know why. I'm not a psychologist, but it works. All the envelopes are hand addressed. This also produces better results than anything else I've tried. Wow, we always use not just a regular stamp, but one that I like to call a fun stamp, a pretty stamp. No forever stamps with an American flag on them. I get dogs and dinosaurs and Scooby-Doo, famous people, whatever I can get my hands on. Why? You know, again, I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist, but the fact is it produces better results. I gotta tell you guys, I've even changed the angle of the stamp, and I can tell you that there's certain angles that simply get better results. The return address is important. Now, some people say you should put it on the back, but here's the thing. Since we're not sealing the envelope, then we put it on the front. And I've tried lots of things with return addresses as well. One of the things I found is that something cute, like a smiley face, increases the response rate. Therefore, for my letters, we use a smiley face icon. I'll use whatever you guys want me to use. When the letters are complete, they're set up in bundles of 100. They're tagged with the date that they were produced, the initials of the person who did the writing, the numbers on the list that was provided, as well as the client's name. This way we can track them for you, everything. Especially if we're producing letters in a drip campaign, which I totally recommend, by the way. You know, if you drop 5,000 letters all at once, you are not gonna be able to handle it in terms of the phone. How do you think I know that? Finally, ultimately, guys, it's about results, right? Ultimately, you want to know that the company you hire is gonna be able to produce results. We have a proven track record of 6 to 8% response rate with our letters. That's huge. Let's face it, y'all. If junk mail, generally speaking, is a success if it gets between 0.25% and 1% response rate. So if you're ready to get serious about making money in real estate, then please contact us at 501-519-4036. Or if you're viewing this video in the website, just press the button below the video, upload your list, tell us your quantity, tell us how you want your drip set up, and let's get started making you guys some bucks in real estate. What do you think? So guys, by now I'm sure y'all know I'm about systems and about machines. The less work I can do in the market and farm out to others, I'm happy to do, because the more people making money, the more I'm going to make money. Well, I'll make money that way. I've learned that's one of the best ways to get rich in this country. You make others rich, you're all going to come up together. It just seems to work better. I don't know. It just seems to work better.
If you want to do what I do in terms of building an army of people to do this for you, let me give you a few tips. Now, I've already mentioned that scripts work better than cur excuse me, that a script works better than cursive. I'm also here to tell you that in my experience, young ladies in their 20s have a particular kind of handwriting that the guys just don't have. I'm looking for something kind of flowy. Now, it's got to be script, not cursive, like I said, but it's still got to flow. Why? Because again, it gets the letters opened better. I can't tell you how many times we laugh in the office because people will call up and say, "Yeah, this Alan guy has got some really interesting handwriting. He writes like a girl." Maybe it goes along with the telemarketing thing about the young female southern voice. I really don't know what makes it work. I just know it works. And I don't care what makes it work, so long as I know it works. And that's not to say we don't have guys that do the letters, but it's the handwriting that I'm looking for. Okay, like I said, it's got to be flowy, and it's because it just works better. Anyway, I pay my letter writers $50 per 100. They don't get paid for the setup, the proof, the copy, and none of that stuff. They get paid for finished letters. And we check them. They don't get too many mistakes before they are uninvited to write letters. Now, I like helping people out, but at the end of the day, I'm trying to make money here. And while it can need, I mean, actually, it needs to be a little sloppy, it can't be so sloppy that the letters are wrong or don't get opened. And I give incentives also, and I would invite you to do this. You know, whether we're doing letters for me or whether we're doing letters for you guys, we're tracking those letters, and we track, among other things, who wrote them. It's a quality control thing for us, okay? We do this on the mailing list itself by address. This way, when my letter writers have a letter that hits and we make a sale, you know, I'll flip them 100, 200 bucks, depending on whether it's a wholesale deal or a retail, flip and hold or buy and hold, whatever it is. This gives them an incentive to write lots of letters and to do it right. And I'll tell you, I make a production of it. I'll go in where they're writing the letters and hand out checks. They like that. Again, basic capitalism, but basic capitalism with a conscience. The more you help people out, the more it's going to come back to you. Whatever you pay them, it should always be an amount between minimum wage in your state and about 20 bucks an hour. Any more than that, you're paying them too much. And if you get any less than that, you might get yourself in trouble with the state. Because here's the thing, even though that they're on contract, just because somebody's on contract does not mean that they make less than minimum wage, okay? State's got some things in place that will make sure that they're getting the equivalent of minimum wage. And if I haven't said it specifically, let me say it now. Never pay these people by the hour. Never. If you do that, it gives them the incentive to go very slow, and you will not like the results. Surely you guys can see why, right? And you know, I'm going to go over scripts in other places in the course, but as long as I'm here and we've been talking about all this, let me go over some of the questions you're going to want to either have your answering service ask or whoever answers the phone. If you're answering the phone, you're going to need to get these questions asked. You're going to need the answer to these in order to do some negotiation. So let me kind of plant the seeds here. Of course, the question, you're going to get their name and their phone number, obviously. Okay, you're going to need the address. You're going to ask them what the house will appraise for and what they're asking. What that's going to tell you is, you know, if they want retail, because if they're wanting the appraised value, they're going to want retail, and there's no money in that, right? Maybe if it's a subject to, but that's a different story. You'll ask them what they owe on the house. They may or may not tell you. But again, that'll be more about subject to stuff. And still, it gives you a place, even with a wholesale or a retail thing, that gives you a place to be able to negotiate from. You'll ask how they heard about you. Now, if you've done the tracking stuff that I told you about on the front end, you'll know exactly where they heard about you. However, what you're trying to do here is to see how truthful they're going to be with you. Okay? If they're you want to know if they're living there, if you do, how soon they could move, again, because that's going to help you in your deal making. And if their payments are current or behind, which they may or may not tell you, just like they may or may not tell you how much they owe, okay? The other thing you'll definitely have to know is if the house needs repairs, because remember, the maximum allowable offer you'll be able to offer them is going to be the after repaired value times 70% minus any repairs that are needed. So you have to talk to them about that. And of course, you'll verify it in the field. But again, when you're getting them qualified, you're going to want to know these things, at least from their perspective. Now, guys, that's going to cover it for marketing for the ultimate wholesale and retail. I mean, I could do a whole course on this, and I will do it. But for what you guys need to know to get started and really start making some money in this business, I think that'll handle it. Marketing Folks, marketing is the single most important part of this business, and really the single most important part of any business. I see this over and over. To be honest with you, I'm guilty of doing it myself. If you find yourself in a moment where things are tight, the last thing you want to do is cut your advertising and marketing budget. You cut your advertising budget, you just cut your lead generation. You cut the lead generation, you have no sales. You just cut your income. And if you're a bit tight, that's going to make you tighter. I think we'd all agree that Henry Ford was probably one of the greatest businessmen of all time, at least in the United States. And you know, and here's what he had to say about marketing and advertising. A man who stops advertising to save money is like a man who stops the clock expecting to save time, okay? So, having your potential clients know your business is out there is paramount to your success. Without it, you're dead in the water. Okay, guys, until next time.